welcome to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. You got me, Becky Friedman, as your host today. And with me in the studio is Josh. How you doing, Josh?
Doing pretty good.
And for the first time in a while, you actually have Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey from our remote location. Sam, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Of course I came up here with the ability to record, you know, just in case.
Just in case, and this week is one of those cases.
Absolutely.
You're up on your mountain retreat. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. Let's see. I did come down to Tacoma a bit ago to see a live show. I got to see Nick's band, which is always awesome. I've been writing code. I checked in on a couple nets on 40 meters this afternoon. I'm catching up on the stuff I've missed over the last couple years in Minecraft. I'm taking a serious chunk of me time, even if summer is over. And it's cold now.
Very nice. Yeah, you guys got snow, didn't you?
Yeah, well, no. It looked like, when you were up here, it looked like snow, but it was just really hail that refused to leave for a few days. and so we made a snowman, or a hail man out of it. I don't know what you'd call that, a grapnel man. Grapnel man sounds like a third-tier Marvel superhero.
I think it sounds like one of the characters on one of the mid-levels of Mega Man video game.
I wonder what Grapple Man is probably sensitive to Flame Man and helps defeat T-Man, I'm guessing.
I think you got that right.
Okay.
So,
yes.
As you've been up there in your mountain retreat, I don't know if you've really been paying attention to some of the news as it may be of interest or relate to atheists or humanists or skeptics or those that are interested in using a scientific mindset.
A little bit, you know. I mean, I clearly have the internet up here, so I'm trying to keep on top of stuff. But as it happens, I'll read something, and then I'll read something disquieting. I go, hey, you know, I'm just going to watch like Adventure Time for 6 hours and stop paying attention to the news.
That sounds good. Well, we actually have some good news for us, and it has to do with churches and religious people doing good things for once. You know, we spend a lot of time saying, hey, thoughts and prayers isn't enough. And there's loads of religious people at this point that are saying, I don't want thoughts and prayers, even though they are religious and they may be believers. But for what it's worth, we've got an Indiana megachurch that has paid off millions of dollars worth of medical debt for families in 10 cities in the congregation surrounding community. Northview Church, based in Carmel, partnered with RIP Medical Debt, an organization that buys debt from collection companies for fractions of its worth, after raising $20,000 from its congregants. Other churches followed suit, and together they were able to settle $7.8 million of individual outstanding debt. The church stated that beneficiaries of canceled debt are not necessarily connected with the church and may be surprised to learn of the unsolicited charity action. The church emphasized that no adverse financial effects will impact recipients as a result of the debt cancellation. Josh, what do you make of this?
So this is actually the church behaving very well, and I applaud it wholeheartedly. $20,000 doesn't sound like a whole lot, but that's from one church. So depending on how much they actually take in, I mean, it might just be a drop in the bucket, but... So the way debt cancellation works for medical debt is that it's actually bought wholesale. I can't remember exactly what the ratio is, but usually it's like five times the cost, one fifth of the cost or something like that.
Okay, so like I have an appendectomy that needs to get done. My insurance only covers 85% of it, and suddenly I'm on the hook for $18,000, right? That goes into collections. A church needn't raise, or someone else needn't have $18,000 to take care of that?
Yeah, no, it's usually sold at a discounted rate, so that way
you're saying it's sold at about 20 cents on the dollar for wholesale medical debt then.
Right, so I believe the $7.8 million figure is what they figured that they're saving the people. The church doesn't even have to come up with that much to actually forgive that much debt. But regardless of which, still fantastic use of donor money.
I definitely really like it. We've seen high-profile entertainers. I think John Oliver did this with either medical debt or student loan debt. I don't even remember at this point. And I like when we're looking at, you know, like you said, donor money. You can donate to a nonprofit and donate to a tax deductible organization. Churches that are registered are also tax deductible organizations. And so when you look at like figures of how many people donate to charity, church donations count as charity. And in many cases, we kind of look with a skeptical eye and saying, well, what is being done with that? If that tax deductible donation that I give to this mega church is going to buy another, large projection screen or a PA system so you can pipe in even more louder Jesus music, or to buy a new drum set for the worship band, is that or should that really be considered charity as opposed to giving alms to the poor, as one is likely to see in a lot of religious texts and things like that?
Well, if church bands work the way I'm used to them working, a new drum set for the church band might actually qualify as alms to the poor.
Okay, yeah. You come from a family of musicians. We can tell that, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, not always a paid gig is what I'm saying.
Well, in this case, though, when we look at medical debt, that really feels like significant charity that has a direct impact for people that are really suffering financially.
This is precisely the kind of thing that atheists have been saying churches can do to help out the community for years and years and years and years. I mean, you know, we make jokes about thoughts and prayers or tots and pears or whatever, and that's all fun and good and whatnot. But, you know, when people are looking for examples of things that churches can do in a real sense to help people, taking, I guess, what could be called the John Oliver route, is exactly the kind of thing that a lot of atheists will mention. Now, I'm not going to pretend that atheists came up with this idea and that churches are stealing from us. I mean, medical debt is and medical bankruptcies are an endemic problem in the United States that everybody who's not making money off of it is sensitive to. And so, you know, I'm not going to say, hey, this is actually credit for atheists. This is just an example of a church doing something that we would say is a clear good. And when it happens, I think it behooves us to step back and say, hey, good job.
I especially like that, you know, it's not just for their own congregants, although I would be all over applauding that as well. You're legitimately helping the people within your community. But this is people that aren't even associated with the church. And I think it's 10 different cities or communities that this church sort of serves in this wider metropolitan area. It means that in some cities, like at least two cities, there is no more medical debt for individuals residing within those city limits. That's huge. And not all of them are going to be congregants of this place.
Until Uncle Bob at the gas station has a heart attack next week.
Okay. And we go back into medical debt.
Right. Yeah. So this debt is also, it's like I said, it's bought wholesale. So you don't know whose debt you're buying. You're just buying a block of debt from an institution. And then you're counseling it out. So it's not targeted. It's basically like, okay, we can do this good and we don't care who benefits from it. It's going to be anybody and everybody that actually has, that's a part of this pool.
Josh, that alone raises some questions for me about the wholesale nature of medical debt, in that if it's being sold for pennies on the dollar or dimes on the dollar in this case, and raising something on the order of $20,000, can cancel $7.8 million of individual outstanding debt, I think that says a lot about the nature of how the medical industry is ran at a profit.
Yeah, to be fair, the original church raised $20,000 and then other churches followed to help raise an amount that was able to settle that $7.8 million. But it did not approach even $1 million as far as I'm aware. And so your point definitely still stands, Sam, that when you say we're willing to settle those things, it's totally fine to just, say, it's not actually worth $7.8 million.
Yeah. So insurance companies and medical billers, they feel justified in charging people these exorbitant prices because they have to sit there and try and make up what they can from the people that can't pay. And so what's happening is we're in a vicious cycle of, I have to pay this massive amount on my medical bill because the cost of the device that I got is so high because so many people really can't afford it. And so because of this, it's just becoming a vicious circle of just massive amounts of money being required to feed the beast.
so it's actually a positive feedback cycle wherein somebody can't pay for something, they go into bankruptcy, that debt is carried, and then that debt is carried by other patients who are now paying higher premiums and higher prices that they can't afford, and then that debt is carried by other people who are forced to pay. So it's sort of this, it's a positive feedback cycle. The more bankruptcies we have, the higher insurance rates and medical costs are, the more bankruptcies you have. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, right. No, absolutely. It's not getting better.
So, I mean, that's the thing, is me being who I am and my particular politics, I've always been in favor of, a public option for healthcare, but I've never, I've never been involved in the medical industry, so I wasn't really certain how the sausage dollar was made in the medical industry, as it were.
Yeah, I'm not involved either. I just, from my research, just for reading about it. So not claiming to be an expert.
Sure.
So I did say that there are a few religious groups that are doing what we would consider, putting your money where your mouth is, or acting towards real, true, good human charity. And for that, next one, I want to bring us to Atlanta.
One second, though.
Okay.
It just occurred to me while we were talking about this that what if we got together with somebody who has a degree in divinity from somewhere meaningful, like not the kind of,
like Harvard,
yeah, or something like that. So not like the one we bought for Mike when he retired from Ask an Atheist, and started the first regional church of canceling medical debt of Greater Tacoma. And just did it that way.
Ooh, you are on to an interesting proposition,
yeah,
Sam Mulvey.
Build a program around that, then you could probably actually get people interested in that just by saying that we're just going to do straight good things. It doesn't matter what you believe. This is just about like trying to do a public good.
We're gonna rent a tiny house, and that's going to be our church. And we're gonna pass the collection plate every week. And the only thing we're going to do with that collection plate is buy wholesale medical debt and cancel it.
Only flaw with that logic is that the prices here in Tacoma have gone so bad for rent that it's going to probably take way too much just for a property.
Well, okay. I said tiny house. What I mean is shed.
Yeah, there you go.
We rent a shed.
A she shed?
Oh, God. Do we have to gender our outlying structures? Is that the world we live in? I was not a big fan of the phrase man cave. I mean, there were some puns there that could be had that aren't good for radio, but I don't know. I could go on about that.
As an owner of a man cave, I can't abide by that.
I think whatever we establish to cancel medical debt, it will be a non-gendered structure that does not hew to the binary, since we're already upending all social norms of late stage capitalism.
So yeah, I'm going to plead ignorance. I didn't realize she shed meant it was like the alternative to a man cave.
Yeah, you get to have your little cry cut and your scrapbooking supplies and your knitting. That's typically when you look all over Pinterest what you're going to find.
I see.
Again, falling into like a very gendered expectation of a little out structure that would be a place where you can have your own alone time and do your hobbies free from the encumbrances of other social familial obligations.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just a little sensitive to it because people call my lab my man cave, and it's not a man cave. I work here. This is where I make money. This is not, I don't watch pay-per-view MMA here, damn it. what would it be? The they room? What's the they void? I don't know. I can't think of a non-gendered version of the concept, but maybe I'll come up with
something. Your office. That would be just your office.
That's what I call it. It's my office or my lab, depending on which room I'm in.
Okay. All right. Are we ready to go to Atlanta now?
Yes, let's go to Atlanta.
Well, an Atlanta-based Jewish group has started a program to help ICE and Border Patrol agents quit their jobs and find new ones. Never Again Action Atlanta launched their Quit ICE initiative and website to coincide with Yom Kippur, the Jewish Day of Atonement. A cadre of volunteer career counselors and recruiters stand by, ready to freely and confidentially assist agents seeking a job change with resumes, cover letters, interviews, job searches, and career matching. The organization pledges that when they say never again, referring to the atrocities of the Holocaust, they mean it. And when their protesters chant quit your job, they'll actually help agents to do it. Sam, you and I have had in-depth discussions because of my heritage, my Jewish heritage, and my own feeling very uncomfortable with these chants of never again with the Holocaust, and then folks that I grew up with teaching me these kinds of things, essentially turning their backs on our rotten and broken and cruel immigration detention system.
Yeah, we have talked a lot about that, but I think I might let you lead that conversation.
Well, I mean, the fact is, I grew up in the sort of modern American Jewish context, going to Hebrew school after school twice a week, you know, much as Catholic kids will go to CCD or Mormon kids will go to seminary or, you know, other kids will go to Sunday school. So you spend a few hours every week, you know, learning cultural and religious and language things associated with your religion and culture. And a lot of the elders, so to speak, within our community, a lot of our Hebrew school teachers, a lot of our youth group advisors were children of Holocaust survivors, or if they were particularly aged, they were Holocaust survivors themselves. It was not uncommon in congregations, you know, in the 80s and 90s to have the older individuals have visible blue ink tattoos on their arms, signifying that they were, you know, they were in concentration camps. And we grew up with this chant of never again, right? Never again will a genocide befall the Jewish people. And then in a larger sense, never again will we stand by idle when these kinds of atrocities are happening. And so when we see things that have very startling sort of echoes mirroring the run-up to full-on concentration camps being established across Europe that were then followed by death camps, it's very, very difficult to reconcile, you know, older Jewish individuals saying, well, you know, it's completely different, and don't compare it to that because now you're degrading the memory of those who perished in the Holocaust. And I say, no, if you do nothing, you're degrading the memories, you're insulting the memories of the people who perished in the Holocaust. So to see groups like Never Again Action, one that I've participated in our Metro Seattle chapters, you know, having these kinds of actions, it's not just enough to shut down an ICE office for a day. It's not just enough to shout at the agents, quit your job, quit your job. How can you live with yourself? It's, hey, this is a tough thing. We understand your position. We'll help you quit your job. We'll do everything that we can in order to get you into something that provides benefits and security for you and your family that doesn't have to have you violating human conscience.
Yeah, so this is...
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah. So I like this because, I mean, right now morale is notoriously low in ICE and the Border Patrol. Like, not everybody is as gung ho about this current situation. And then also the negative reinforcements that are coming from society to actually fight, to actually denote that this is not a good thing that you're doing. It's having its toll on these agents, and actually developing a path out for them is a very powerful response to actually, because I mean, look in the atheist community, a ancillary example would be the, I'm blanking on it, but the,
are you thinking preacher, of the clergy project?
The clergy project, right.
Ah, so someone is in a position of leadership within their congregations, and you say, hey, we'll be here to catch you when and if you want to leave this. We're here to support you in this.
Right, exactly. And so
I hadn't thought of that connection. That's an astute one, Josh. Yeah.
So, yeah, and then I have high hopes that this will actually be able to show that there is a lot of ICE agents that can come out and actually be good people and actually tell us exactly what's going on inside, because I mean, we're only seeing the tip of what's going on too.
Absolutely. As time goes on, and as you know, education and journalism and investigation continues, we're going to hear some fairly bad things. I don't think that's going to be a surprise to anybody who listens to a show like this one. Not just our Becky's, you know, ethnic and religious background. I mean, we have the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma. It's in our backyard.
Oh, no, they're trying to rebrand it, Sam, didn't you know? Because if we change the name, then all of the protests against it will magically be, I don't know, dematerialized and weakened. It's now, I think, the Tacoma Processing Center.
Okay.
So, making it sound like a mail facility.
So Kellogg's Fruit Loops flavored genocide place. I don't know. Whatever you want to call it. It's the Northwest Detention Center. I think both, you know, a lot of people are saying, a lot of people I've talked to about stuff like about trying to get people out of here and speaking to ICE agents and people who work at these places, they want a complete adversarial relationship. And I don't think that's a successful strategy if your ultimate goal is to make both of these things go away. I think you need a multi-pronged strategy. I think you need the protesting. You need the social pressure. You need the media pressure. We have to keep the media pressure going on this in order to get these things closed. I mean, we have to talk to the people who sign contracts with ICE. We have to put pressure on people who sign contracts with GEO. That is absolutely required. But you do need a way. What this does is it gets people who are involved who don't want to be involved away out. It shows them that there's a way to get away from this. And when you see that it's not necessarily a siege mentality, that it's that you do not have to die on the hill of what will, I think, someday obviously be illegal, is now and will obviously be seen in the future as illegal imprisonment. You don't have to die on this hill just because you happen to be there right now. There is a way out for you. And I would very much like to see these things, see the projects like these done more widely.
I think what's amazing is that they're able to report already that there have been two agents that have contacted them. The other thing is guaranteeing confidentiality and then having dedicated people that are willing to volunteer and say, yes, I have this skill set and I want to assist in this particular way. And so it does give me hope. Every time I see, you know, a Jewish religious individual that says don't compare the immigration debacle to the Holocaust because it's so insulting to us. For every one of those, I see something like Never Again that's actually doing things with feet on the ground and that can have real impact. Now, some of us, you know, we're secularists, we're atheists. We can say, hey, there's some religious individuals that are doing some good. There's loads of people in the government that apparently think that if you are an atheist and a secularist, you have no interface with the religious people and you are the downfall of society, right? This is nothing new to us. Sam, how long have you been doing this show?
Well, we're at 9.5 years right now.
Yeah, and it hasn't changed during the course of 9.5 years. There are some people that think that atheism is the downfall of humanity. Well, we need to look no further than our own Attorney General William Barr, who has blamed secularism for societal challenges, including drug abuse, violence, and mental illness. In a speech at Notre Dame University's law school, Barr lamented the growing ascendancy of secularism, which he described as a social pathology, and claimed that it was leading to a total moral upheaval that included wreckage of the family, record levels of depression, mental illness, suicide, and senseless violence, and an increase in numbers of angry and alienated young males. The AG also asserted that progressives were on a militant campaign to destroy traditional moral order and were risking social, educational, and professional ostracism and exclusion waged through lawsuits and savage social media attacks. Sam, do you have anything to say to Attorney General William Barr?
I actually don't think this is particularly special. This is not one of those quote unquote unprecedented things that the Trump administration does. This is just standard American political miscategorization. I think what you have is We live in an information, I say this all the time on the show when we talk about political things like this, we live in an information rich society, and that's unique and new, is that we are able to see each other and we are able to see trends and see what's happening on a new level. And that's been going on since the turn of the century. And when you have these societal ills, you know, part of the reason why are we dealing with record numbers of mental illnesses? Well, part of it is, okay, yeah, it is the administration. It's making it very depressing to be an American right now. That's true. However, another reason is because they're being noticed and people are getting help in a way that wasn't available 50 or 60 years ago. You know, and the effects thereof. And so you've got this big box of moral ills, and you just draw a line out of it and say, I liked it better when things were the way before. Everything in this box is bad, and I'm going to blame it on the people who like new things. So vote for me and give me all your stuff. This is just basic political grandstanding at its best. It's like if I said like the proliferation of flavored Oreos and flavored potato chips was a reason why it was a reason to absolutely disband the GOP and say that conservatives should never be allowed to vote again. I'm taking a group of unrelated things, putting them in a box, and giving you a reason to fight for them.
I like the lemon Oreos though.
Oh, heathen!
It's the crap lemon.
Is it like those blues? I haven't tried those. I mean, I know it's so, like, have you ever had like the blue lemon?
Yeah.
That you get? Yeah, yeah, I love like those, but I never had the lemon Oreos.
Oh, they're fantastic.
There's a blue lemon?
Well, no, it's just the brand. It's BLU. I don't even know if they even exist anymore. But
they're just like little lemon cream cookies.
Yeah, pretty much. But they're delicious. But yeah, I imagine the Oreos taste the same. Just ripped it off and then stuck their label on it. So yeah, this is just literally Satanic Panic 2020. It's the same old story repackaged, but unfortunately, it's the highest levels of government pushing it.
Well, also notice that the growing ascendancy of secularism, social pathology, the wreckage of the family, levels of depression, mental illness, other than suicide, none of this has a death toll and completely ignores a lot of the social problems that we're facing today that do have death tolls attached to them that the more conservative factions of the United States are completely willing to ignore. Notice what's inside the box, but also notice what's outside of the box.
And nothing that he is saying is supported by evidence. I mean, so he says numbers of angry and alien young males, but most of those young males that have committed anything that we consider horrendous, which is a lot, they're mostly religious. I think I can think off of one where it was an atheist that did it, and he didn't do it because of atheism. He did it because he was mad about a parking spot.
Right. The people who go to the angry young males who go to war against shopping malls, movie theaters, and churches are more likely to believe with more likely to stand with AG Barr than they will with my cosmopolitan self.
The day before they commit their acts, they probably have been happy to talk to Barr.
Absolutely,
Barr wouldn't even know it better.
Yeah.
Well, what I see in terms of the numbers of alienated, angry young males with senseless violence and everything is, hey, secularists that also want to break down traditional gender roles, don't you know that makes boys and go shoot up movie theaters? You know, if only we would have traditional family roles where women weren't working and doing all this stuff, then the boys would be fine. That's what I hear. And maybe it's my own feminist, blood running through my veins. But that one really gets under my skin.
If attacking or if any modification to the standing of boys in the United States ends in death tolls or violence, I would advocate for ripping the Band-Aid off and completely and absolutely changing immediately what it means to be a boy in the United States or the world. Because if you can't change, if any change at all results in violence, then that's a broken system that just needs to be destroyed.
I like that point. What do you guys think about this painting secularists as violent, right? We have militant, we have savage social media, we have exclusion waged. You know, you talk about war being waged, but he's talking about waged through lawsuits. Militant. What do you guys think about that kind of linguistic painting?
Well, obviously, I have bullets right now that have engraved on them atheist Bible verses, because that's totally something that we do.
Okay.
John Birch, Party of 1956. John Birch, Party of 1956. Your table is available.
Okay. So I think that maybe we've put a little capstone on William Barr and his antiquated ideas.
No, I think you're very specifically wrong about something, Becky, and I want to call you out on this.
Okay.
And that's lemon Oreos are terrible. You have two concepts of lemon flavoring. You've got actual lemon, which is acid and sour and citric acidity and citrusy, you know, and wonderfully citrus. And that's the lemon flavor you want. But then you've got this sort of dairy based lemon cream thing that you find. And that just feels like you're eating your grandmother's couch pillows. And that's just not fun. That's no good.
My question is, can you dunk these in milk?
Of course you can dunk them in milk, but you can also dunk them in your tea.
Ah,
that's why they are superior.
I see. Actually, that's pretty...
Because who wants to dunk chocolate cookie things in their tea? That doesn't... That's not good.
A lot of British people?
Chocolate in your tea? Meh.
Okay. Black tea, that makes more sense than regular tea.
Speaking of, dietary things, Sam, I think you might have more feelings about this as well. As wrong as I apparently am about lemon cookies,
okay.
They are no miracle diet berries.
Oh, boy.
Democratic presidential candidate Andrew Yang tweeted his enthusiasm for Dr. Oz. Yang posted, "Excited to speak to Dr. Oz in his show tomorrow. He's made a lot of people smarter about their health," followed by the emojis for thumbs up, a smile, and a flexed bicep. Mehmet Oz, who serves...
No eggplant, though.
No, definitely eggplant. No eggplant. Not on this one. Mehmet Oz, who serves on the President's Council on Sport, Fitness and Nutrition, is a former cardiac surgeon who has since become a TV personality who hawks a variety of ideas like psychic mediums and products including so-called miracle berries, dietary supplements, and magic beans. He has come under investigation by Senator Claire McCaskill for his medical claims. In his 10-minute appearance, Yang largely talked about the need for public options for healthcare and using technology to incentivize health, improve diagnosis and treatment, and increase access to healthcare. He also did apple cider vinegar shots with the talk show host. Sam, I believe that you have something to say about apple cider vinegar shots.
That's my trick. Come on, guys.
That's your jam.
That's my jam. No, jam is my jam. This is my apple cider vinegar. Okay, I do have a vinegar collection. I very much like varieties of vinegar. Acetic acid is pretty awesome. Okay, clearly I like acidic foods. I like lemons. I like vinegar. The way a lot of people approach hot foods, I approach sour.
And you ingest them by shots?
I have done shots of vinegar, yeah.
Not like injections.
No,
not
yeah,
like-
no, but like sitting there slamming a shot after a shot after a shot, and then...
Yeah, like in a little cup, with a little glass.
No.
Yeah, with a baking soda chaser.
Oh, that would be terrific. So
are we bringing up Andrew Yang? I mean, Andrew Yang seems to be a candidate that many atheists have been cheerleading for, right? There's people that said, oh, he's so reasonable and he's guided by evidence and he wants to disrupt the economic system in this particular way. And then he just lost a whole bunch of atheists who also happened to be like scientific skeptics by rubbing elbows with this guy. Josh, have you ever seen Dr. Oz? You seen the crazy stuff that he's hawking?
I mean, according to Dr. Oz, apple juice will kill us all.
Apple juice will kill us all.
Apple juice will kill us all, but apple cider won't.
That was that was about the arsenic scare, because every apple that was produced in China had arsenic laden pesticides in it. And since we feed apple juice to babies, it was China's, I don't know, plot to kill all U.S. toddlers or something like that. I don't know.
How much apple juice do we import from China?
China is a big exporter of apple juice. So apples are grown a lot in China, Russia, Eastern Europe, and the U.S. and Canada.
And Washington. Yeah. I mean, this is the apple state.
Yep.
The only places I see apples coming from here are here and, for some reason, Chile.
Yeah, well, Chile is a big fruit exporter, a big produce exporter to the U.S. because...
Has anybody told Dr. Oz that apples also have cyanide in them?
Oh, no, I'm pretty sure he made that.
Oh, he did make that claim?
Okay. I'm pretty sure he was on that whole, everything that you could possibly think about apples, he was on. So Andrew Yang is... He's most known for his stance on UBI, which is a universal basic income. His particular idea is that basically give everybody a check every month for $1,000.
There's a lot of people that are down with that. Like, there's cities that have done that, and it's made a big difference. And you look at how that money's being spent, and hey, it's mostly on like paying your electric bills and groceries, indicating that like... A lot of folks would really benefit and be able to do major, like, life transformational things if they just had a little bit more cash on hand.
Yeah. Generally, the people that would begin, it would also feed it almost directly into the economy. I mean, it's not like giving a tax break to rich people and then they pocket it and it just accumulates their wealth so they could sit there and say that they have that they're worth four comma a club now.
Okay. So what's the problem with this, Josh?
We've been micturating down for 40 years now, thanks to Reagan. I mean, we've had
trickle-down economics, voodoo economics.
This just seems like trickle-up economics. And so it's like, well, if one thing is bad, let's invert it and try that. And, there might be some, there might be something there. You know, I don't have a strong opinion on UBI at this point.
Yeah, so there are actually good, valid arguments for UBI, because the thing is like a lot of our job loss is happening because of automation. So we are going to be running into a job crunch pretty soon. And so the idea is like, okay, corporations make as much money as you want, but then we have to sit there and make sure everybody else is actually able to live a meaningful life, even if they can't, if there's no longer any jobs for them. That is not the case for Yang, and he gave up the ghost on a Dave Rubin show. The idea is that it will wean people off of other programs such as Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security.
Wait. So this transformational $1,000 a month for every citizen that does so awesome for our poorest individuals who already receive things like SNAP benefits, so nutritional, assistance and maybe rental assistance. He thinks that $1,000 is going to cover all of that.
Yeah, no, essentially it's going to be like, okay, you're now getting this $1,000, which understand that translates to $12,000 a year. That's transformational for somebody that makes $12,000 to $24,000 a year. I mean, don't get me wrong, that is a massive amount of money for somebody like that. That helps with so much. But then it's eventually what's going to happen, and it makes it easier to cut all other programs.
I am not a fan of this Yang, and not just because he decided to rub elbows with Oz.
Well, in my case, yeah, rubbing elbows with Dr. Oz was a major sign. But I'm not. You guys have the actual policy down. So I'm going to go with the emotional end of it. Is that, you know, listening to him in debates and talking to other people and stuff about Yang is he's like, yeah, oh, he's always introduced as somebody who knows how to make money because we need to run government like a business for reasons. And he's a Silicon Valley entrepreneur. And as somebody who's a part of that industry, who made a lot of money in that industry, lost a lot of money in that industry, and whatever, I am not down with President Tech Bro.
Yeah, Silicon Valley is not a good model for running a country.
No, and precisely what you get is what you guys are talking about is you're not getting like somebody who pays attention to infrastructure and foundational changes or anything like that. He's not offering a policy that will carry us for the next 50 years. He's not offering us the next New Deal. He's offering us a series of cheap hacks. Here, I'm going to provide you with the government program version of Lyft. And, you know, all the infrastructural changes that happened, all the people who were left by the wayside because the traditional taxi systems and the licensing and the taxes and all that, don't pay attention to that. Just see how awesome this cheap hack is because I'm giving you free money. To the point where part of his campaign at debates is literally just picking people at random and giving them free money because he's rich and he can do that. Like, this doesn't seem like good, positive social change. This seems like the preservation and extension of corporate oligarchy.
Ooh.
I can't wait to get the reaction from the Yang Gang, because that's coming. Just talking about that, your emails are going to be blast.
No, I'm going to be burned in effigy. I'm aware of that.
Well, I think that there's someone else that's pretty smart about money, and that's someone who bought some Jesus shoes. Did you guys hear about the Jesus shoes?
Yeah. I thought this was more, but...
Only from Transmetropolitan, not...
not the most recent iteration of Jesus shoes?
Nope. As far as I'm concerned, you made this story up.
I did not make this story up, and for that, I'm just going to have to read to you about the story, where a custom-altered pair of Nike Air Max 97 sneakers have sold for more than $1,400 and are now being relisted for $4,000 online. The Brooklyn-based company MSCHF, or Mischief, produced the shoes, injected the air pockets with blessed water from the Jordan River, and added a gold crucifix as a shoelace charm. The result is a set of sneakers that allows the wearer to walk on water. Mischief touts itself as a counterculture media and product brand, playing in a gray area that isn't yet defined by traditional approaches. They drop new projects or products every other Tuesday. The company's head of commerce noted that the Jesus shoes were a response to other, quote, ridiculous brand collaborations, with a nod toward Arizona Iced Tea and Adidas.
So I thought this was going to be more than just a pair. I thought this was about like a whole line of shoes that were being sold out and eventually got up to the price of $1,400.
You were so disappointed to find it was just a custom art piece.
Just a custom art piece. But it's a brilliant company called Mischief. I mean, I want to know who bought this. I mean, did they buy it because they actually thought they would be able to walk on water? And also, what does that say about you?
I'm guessing Martin Shkreli.
He's out. I know. Oh, right. He's trying to get out, but
right.
So the walking on water.
He's gonna lock up. He's gonna put him in a vault next to that that Wu-Tang album.
Oh, he already gave that up.
Oh, did he?
Oh, yeah. No, that. I don't know why we haven't heard. I have not heard it. I right now it's sitting in some vault in the Department of Justice, and William Barr is probably listening to it right now, laughing at everybody.
The militant secularists that have given him a Wu-Tang.
That's track 7.
and hey, Wu-Tang, they are atheists as well. I mean, they performed at the Reason Rally. So the walking on water thing, I have to clarify, because I was mentioning this to someone and they said, wait, the they claim that the shoes allow you to walk on water. No, imagine Nike shoes, they've got those little like plastic air pockets that you can see into in the sole of the shoe, like in the heel. You've seen those, like basketball shoes, right? Something. And they took that and they just injected water into it. The thing is that they dyed it like a turquoise blue. So,
and it's blessed water?
Yeah, it's holy water. So they apparently took water from the River Jordan. And then they had a priest in Brooklyn bless it, right? Thereby turning it into holy water.
I think we need arrows pointing at bold, italicize, underline the word apparently in that sentence. They apparently took water from the River Jordan.
Well, yes. I mean, just like, you know, every bottled water is straight from the spring. Spring right. Being a spigot in a factory.
Labeled spring.
Yeah.
So, yes, sorry to disappoint, but the Jesus shoes allow you to step on a sole that is the S-O-L-E, not a soul, because we're atheists. We don't believe that, you know, the immortal souls exist or anything like that. And so you can step through your sneakers and underneath your own foot in the heel of your sneaker is blessed river water from the Jordan. Have you guys ever heard of this ridiculous collaboration between Arizona Iced Tea and Adidas? I didn't know that Arizona Iced Tea was that popular, and I don't know that I would want to wear sneakers featuring an iced tea. I don't know. I mean,
is there iced tea in the sneakers?
I don't know. Like, did they inject it into the?
If you get thirsty, do you pop your shoe off and you got iced tea?
I want the pumps that have the little pump on the tongue, and it'll be like a gusher, right? Like you pump up your basketball shoes.
You know, I bought those shoes when I was a kid. Or actually, I begged my parents for a pair of those.
Yeah, everybody's had those shoes as a kid.
Anybody that's from the 80s.
But we're talking about me, the least athletic human being west of the Mississippi. I just thought they were I literally thought, oh my God, those are like weird, creepy technology. I have to try them.
Oh, and tech shoes. Okay.
Yeah, I was literally interested in the technology and not the basketball. In fact, I've never liked basketball.
If you were 15 years younger, you would have been a kid that begged to get the wheelies shoes, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And the ones with the little light ups in the heel and stuff?
I think I have a pair of shoes that light up, actually.
Okay. All right. So Josh is actually just flashing a picture of Arizona iced tea and Adidas, and it just uses the vaguely indigenous and native designs of the Arizona iced tea label as part of the panels on the sides of your Adidas sneakers. And you have to have apparently the turquoise laces to really complete it all. So
I'm completely disappointed because I was imagining that it was a flask, like an iced tea flask. You just like kind of like a Get Smart style. You pull off your shoe and you drink from it instead of it's a phone. But no, it's some lame artwork.
Oh, the disillusionment of sneakers. And
thanks to, you know, modern technology, if we wanted to create shoes where you could actually walk on water, I'm just thinking like some foam board, a few some hinges, some servo motors, and then so that, you know, and they stack under the sole, and then you press a button and they sort of fold out so that like they're 2 feet wide. And at that point you will float if you stand on water. Can't speak to your stability.
Yeah, balance is an issue.
Yeah, you would be able to walk on water at that point. So eat that, River Jordan.
So you're talking about like snowshoes, except with kickboards.
Right.
Okay. All right.
I'm really inefficient paddleboarding. I don't know. Also, this MSCHF, I went to their website, and I think they're using FuraCode Pro or something like that. And they've got like a countdown to a series of drops that they're going to do. They also did like a font called Times Newer Roman, which
is 15%
bigger.
I love this one because it apparently allows children to complete their reports and their papers without their teachers noticing that they've increased their font size. And, you know, so you can reach your page number requirements for your report or something like that.
I'm totally down with that because page size or page length as an indicator of the ability to write something, I think, is fairly silly.
Exactly. Any teacher that will be fooled by that isn't really worth their salt, because how long should the report be? And you say it should have an introduction and a conclusion and a body that's long enough and detailed enough to make concise and cogent points. It doesn't matter whether it's 7 pages or 13 pages, as long as you got all the information expressed well. But I don't know, that's just me.
I went to this website, I looked at it, and I'm just looking at this, and I'm like, oh no, it's New York art activists. Those guys.
Hey, but we got folks that actually do have a line of atheist shoes that are art activists, and
that
they're
was
in
one of the first
what Germany
news stories we ever did in 2010. That was like I think that was like episode 3.
They've got
combine
yeah,
atheist.
Ich bin atheist. So you can stomp in like dirt or snow or whatever, and you leave a shoe print that says that you're an atheist. And
so this is the most I've ever thought about shoes in about 15 years, because, you know, about 15 years ago, Becky found me those pair of Keen slip-ons, and whenever one of those wears out, she just gets me another pair.
It's worked pretty well for you so far, right?
Yeah.
Except for the...
I never have to tie my shoes again.
Well, you know, for the 3 months in the summer when you wear the sandal version of it, right?
Right.
There's also a callback to On Tour because, well, the sandal versions of them got stolen.
Oh. You had to remind me of that, didn't you?
Oh, sorry. It's a part of show lore and Ask an Atheist show history.
Oh, well, if we ever did Ask an Atheist Jeopardy, that would be Bad Things. Actually, it'd be Bad Things Column 7 for $800, Alex.
Hey, all the stuff that was stolen when we had a smash and grab from our car, I think it totaled more than $800.
Yeah, I think it actually did.
Yep.
Oh, I should probably plug something while we're talking about show lore.
Sure, go ahead.
I did an interview for Left at the Valley. Was it a couple days ago?
Yeah.
It should be out by the time you hear this episode, so you can go to leftatthevalley.com, and I am their most recent interview. They're across, you know, they're in Canada, but I mean, they're like six blocks from our house, so you know, there's a cultural difference, but there's not really a climatological difference, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it would be like a 2 or 3 hour drive up to them, and you know, we're sort of in that same biome as we say. So yeah, check out Left at the Valley. Valley being a reference to the Fraser Valley, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so.
Yeah. Well, Sam, it's nice to have you on your own show.
Oh yeah. Hi. How you doing?
We're doing great. Josh, thank you for joining me as usual.
You're welcome.
I think that'll be it for this evening. You've been listening to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. We actually got Sam Mulvey this week.
I'm going to go pee outside.
If you want to email us, go ahead at questions@atheist.radio. You can find us and all of our episodes at atheist.radio. Tweet us at AskAnAtheistWA. Give us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC. We'll see you guys next week. We'll be right back.